I'm talking to Rebecca Fortnum about her exhibition Self-Contained, which opens at the Freud Museum on the 7th of March. Do you want to tell us about the works that are on show?
Yes, there's a number of works, a series of works in the exhibition. The first group of works are called Dream, and they're a series of drawings of children with their eyes closed, and they are put together in pairs of the same image repeated. Initially these were done just with pencil, and more recently I've been doing these with Silverpoint, which is a quite old-fashioned way of drawing with a silver implement, just basically silver wire on a specially prepared ground. So you get a very fine line.
And what was the significance of Silverpoint? Is this the first time you've worked?
Yeah, it is the first time I've worked in Silverpoint. And it was just suggested to me because of the way that I was drawing. And then my pencils, I started off working with a 2B, and then I started working with a B, and now I've ended up working with a 2H, so they're right. Getting finer and finer. Probably as my eyesight is getting worse, my desire to make very fine drawings has increased. So, and the way that I was drawing with vertical lines, and trying not to to build up the image just using vertical lines. So I suppose you could say they're a little bit like etchings or something, or like engravings. So that's, I think that's why another artist, Lindsay Adams, suggested that I use Silverpoint, and I went and investigated. And I suppose I quite like that it's a little bit unusual, a little bit old-fashioned, something that's out of time. Because I think a lot of the work seems to refer to perhaps a different time, perhaps the end of the last century. The century before, isn't it? We're in the 21st century, aren't we? So, yes, a little sort of very late 19th century references in the work. And the drawings, and at the same time as using this kind of old-fashioned tools, I'm also using contemporary technology. So I'm working from photographs that I take on my iPhone. So, and this is very kind of immediate technology that we all use and we all have around us. And I quite like I like that I can just use my thumb and first finger to expand the image when I want to look in detail at something. So there's a kind of range of sort of technology that's being employed, really.
And do you think using that technology changes the relationship to your sitter? Because they're children and young people, so they might be, with technology or...
Yeah, I mean, I think the children are really used to... Well, they're really used to having their photographs taken.
Yeah.
And obviously they're very used to young, even very young kids. I mean, my daughter's 11 and she's got her first phone, which is sort of interesting and horrifying at the same time. So they are very used to that kind of technology, of having that... photograph being part of their lives. I suppose they always get a bit of a shock because I'm working with my children, my children's friends, and the friends of my and the children of my friends. Mm-hmm. So these are kids that I see every day, and they know now that when I'm asked if I can photograph them, that they have to look serious and they can't grin at me like, you know, they're used to doing, because I wanted to have these very, I suppose, sort of slightly, very straightforward images, very sort of something that didn't give away too much about their personality, as kind of straight as possible. And initially I asked them to close their eyes because I was trying to get them to relax their faces because they would always sort of start grinning at me. Or their friends would be leaping about behind my back, making them laugh. So I got them to close their eyes and so their faces would relax. And then when I started looking at the photographs that I'd taken, I became very interested in looking at somebody who's not looking back at you, and the sense that these children might have a kind of internal imaginative world that one doesn't have access to as an adult or as a parent. And I was quite interested in this kind of refusal of the gaze, of reciprocity of looking, and how kind of double-edged that was. You know, in the one sense they were kind of refusing the controlling gaze of the adult. In another level, you were kind of given carte blanche to look at them because, you know, they couldn't see you. So there was a kind of ambiguity in the sort of relation when the eyes were closed that I got very interested in.
And you present them in pairs. Can you talk a bit about
that? Yeah, well, that happened because I was... I was always in search of the perfect drawing, so I kept making these drawings over and over again. And I showed them to another artist who comes to my studio, Sonia Boyce. And she said, well, you know, maybe it's about that, maybe it's about the series of trying to... we had a whole wall of the same drawing done over and over again. And of course, I was searching for the single one, you know, the one that I felt was good enough. And she said, maybe it's about this kind of journey, the repetition, keeping drawing. And then I realised that if I just put two together, what happened was it destabilised the image so that you'd keep looking from one to the other, you know, almost kind of like biocular, that one eye would be looking at one eye might be looking at the other. And it's like spot the difference, you know, you keep seeing what the difference is between the two. And I quite like that because I thought that it is very difficult to paint, to draw a portrait, because people are different from one moment to the next. And so I thought that by having two drawings of the same image side by side, you'd get a sense of that kind of instability of the sitter's identity, you know, which was most like them. And I might think one drawing was most like them, but they or their parent might think one of the others was most like them. And I suppose also I was experimenting with different kinds of ways of making the image. So one that I would start off and I'd have a traced outline from the photograph, and then I'd kind of fill it in. And then the second one I'd just draw straight from the photograph, but I'd have the memory of doing the copy. So it was a kind of copy of the drawing, but with the memory of doing the initial drawing.
Right.
And drawing straight, I think, always made me work harder because I had to use my eye to make the measurements. So quite often I felt the second drawing was a better drawing, but the first drawing looked more like the child, and I was quite interested in portraiture. As portraiture is a, you know, it's not really valued as a genre now. I mean, it's hard to think of artists who are taken seriously who make portraits. I mean, there are a few, but there aren't that many. But I do think that there is this kind of double bind with portraiture about whether it's successful if it looks like the person, or whether it's or what other ways might that image succeed?
Mm.
You know. As a drawing, as an artwork.
Right, and what do you think? Why did you place them in the Anna Freud room?
I suppose because, when I first made the series, I called them blind, and then that felt a bit harsh, and so then I called them dream, with this idea that with their eyes closed, they were kind of escaping into a different world. So then, of course, you know, immediately you think about Freud. When you mention the notion of dreaming, And I suppose I'm not an expert on Anna Freud at all, but I was absolutely fascinated that the daughter of of Freud would take on this role and start thinking about childhood and as the child herself, in a sense, as the child of Freud. And when I came to the museum, I just, was absolutely fascinated that her room is preserved, and it's got a sense of a space that she inhabited. So the idea of putting the works into the room was born for me, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm very excited about the work going into that room.
Brilliant. And the series that you're putting in the exhibition room, Wide Shut, that is related in a way, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, the Wide Shut
to Dream
series are related. These are the newest works, so these are the ones I'm least sure about how they're quite going to work. But I've kept the idea of having two images, but this time one of the images has the eyes open, and these are much larger works, and they're colourful, so they're more kind of obvious, I suppose, or more kind of startling works. So one of the images has the eyes closed, one of the image the eyes open, and when I was working within the studio, it's almost like a kind of animation that you turn from one to the other, and the eyes open or close, like a kind of I don't know if you've seen on the there's these kind of GIF things that you can get on the internet where you just have like a couple of moments and it's like kind of the eyes open. So I'm hoping that they might work a bit like that. So there are two. The one with the eyes open is very, they're young girls, and they're very much sort of staring out, and they're related to a series of work that I called imperative, which was they had this kind of look like they're kind of demanding something from the viewer, like you can't really ignore them. So the opposite, I suppose, of the eyes closed. And these have been, they've got a kind of veil of oil paint over them that are kind of orange-red colours, so they're very startling. And then they're paired with an image with the eyes closed that is grey, or shades of grey. But that colour has been rubbed into the drawing itself, so the drawing has been submerged, and they're very dreamy images, they're quite romantic images, and so they're held in a kind of juxtaposition or contrast with the eyes open. I mean, all the girls in the Wide Shut series, they're 12. So, there is, it's this very important moment, I think, in a child's development. A kind of prepubescent moment where they're not quite the child they were, but they're not the adult that they're becoming. And I think it was about thinking about that moment. I think there is maybe, sometimes I've noticed, particularly with students, that there is a reluctance to give up on childish things. When I'm working with students in their early 20s, which I completely understand. So there's this kind of, again, this sort of contradictory forces, this kind of rush into, they want to grow up, and at the same time they don't want to leave childhood behind. And so I think it was about that moment.
Yeah. Okay, great. And in the cabinet, directly facing these large portraits, you've got extracts of text that you've printed. Do you want to talk about those?
Yes, these are part of a different series of work, and I'm very interested to see how they will relate in the exhibition room to the Wide Shut series. They're texts that have been taken from a Henry James short story called Turn of the Screw that's quite well known. There's been various films. There's a stage play on at the moment. And it's a ghost story. It's a fantastically scary ghost story about a governess who's looking after two children who... She doesn't really know much about their history. She knows they've had a previous governess that she hasn't met, and she also knows she's not really allowed to. Any problems she has to kind of deal with them by herself. So the story is framed. Someone is telling her story to a kind of. A gathered group in the best time-honored tradition of ghost storytelling. But the story is related as the governess's monologue, so you see everything from her point of view. And it's a story that can be read in two ways. You can either read it as a straight ghost story, if you believe in ghosts, or you can read it as a story of the governess's neurosis being played out, and all the things that go on that she describes are in her mind, rather than things that have actually taken place. And why I was interested in taking a bit of the narrative from the is that she kind of tells her story to control herself, to control her thoughts, and it's interesting. She's a governess because she's trying to govern her own feelings. And so, and what I was interested in was the way that quite often within diary writing, I've been interested in this for a long time, that there's a kind of confessional mode, which is quite often aligned with women in particular. The way that they tell their story is the way that they make their own identity. So I tried to pick, there's seven texts. They've been taken out of the story at different stages, and they show her kind of battling with her own feelings and thoughts. But what I went on to discover after I used these texts was that, and I was thinking about placing them in this museum, was that there has been some research that's shown that Henry James might well have used a case study by Freud as the basis of his story. And it is a story of a governess who is in love with the master of the house, which is also in the Turn of the Screw. And that he had come to that Henry James had read this. There is evidence suggesting that he had read the case study, and that. But I mean, the jury's out on it. There are other writers who think that it's a very straightforward. It's a very straightforward ghost story. It's a fascinating debate, actually. Mm. If anyone wants to go and do some reading.
And so you previously exhibited this series, but here in the Freud, is that right? And here in the Freud Museum, there's a new sort of concept.
Yes. When I exhibited it before, I exhibited it with different imagery, not the imagery that's here, which I won't go into because it's too long and complicated. but they were portraits. But yeah, so I think it'll in relation to the other work here, I think it'll work differently. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much.